When you think about the physical structures that just like hold our modern world together.
Literally the massive steel beams and stuff.
Yeah, exactly. The power grids, giant industrial turbines, there's this baseline expectation of absolute solidity, you
Oh,
know.
absolutely.
You look at a massive hunk of industrial steel and you just assume like, okay, that is a finished, unchanging object.
It feels incredibly permanent. I mean, we design a power plant assuming the metal we build with today is structurally the exact same metal a decade from now.
Right. But then you step into this hidden microscopic world of advanced metallurgy,
Right.
and that illusion of permanence just completely crumbles.
It really does. It's wild.
So today, we are taking a deep dive into a reality where metals are actually more like living, breathing ecosystems.
Yeah.
They age, they evolve,
Yeah.
and sometimes they just completely rewrite their own internal rules based on like impossibly tiny variables.
There's the absolute definition of a structural butterfly
It
effect.
really is. And we are looking at this through the lens of a genuinely fascinating study.
Right, the one published in Metallurgical and Materials Transactions A.
Yes, by researchers T. Sarmale and H. Katie H. Badasia. And they did a deep, deep investigation into the microstructural evolution of this advanced stainless steel, known as NF709.
Yeah, NF709. And the setup for this is just brilliant.
It is. Here is the hook, the central mystery of this research. These scientists took two nearly identical variants of this high-tech steel.
Practically twins.
Right, twins. They baked them at the exact same extreme temperatures for up to 10,000 hours. And despite being practically twins, they got wildly different, just paradox-defying results out of the oven.
Identical environments, entirely different physical destinies.
Exactly. So to really grasp why this matters to you, we had to step into what I like to call the kitchen of extreme engineering.
I like that.
Why do we care so much about this specific metal, this NF709? Like, what is it actually doing out there in the real world?
Well, to understand the metal, you really have to understand the brutal environment it lives in. We are talking about power plant turbines operating at temperatures around 1023 Kelvin.
Wow.
Yeah, that is roughly 1380 degrees Fahrenheit.
Not exactly a casual operating temperature. I mean, at that heat, I imagine the physical rules just start to change.
Drastically, at those temperatures, metals don't just melt into a puddle. You know, they do something far more insidious.
Okay.
They experience a phenomenon engineers call creep.
Creep. That sounds exactly as bad as it is. What is happening mechanically when a metal creeps?
Well, heat is basically just energy. So when you pump that much thermal energy into a metal, the atoms inside the crystal structure start vibrating.
They're shaking violently.
Exactly. And over long periods of time, like months, years, decades,
Right.
that vibration allows the planes of atoms to literally slide past one another under the stress of the turbine's rotation.
Oh, wow.
The metal slowly stretches and deforms at a microscopic level.
So it's like a solid block of taffy slowly sagging under its own weight on a hot day.
That is exactly it. And eventually, the structural integrity is compromised, and you have a catastrophic failure.
So this specific steel, NF709, is the shield standing between a smoothly running power plant and a complete meltdown caused by this, like atomic sagging.
Yes.
And the sources break down the recipe for this shield. It's an austenitic stainless steel
Right.
based on a mix of iron, 20% chromium, and 25% nickel.
Yeah, those make up the bulk of the material. The iron is the foundation,
It's like
obviously. The chromium is there to provide an invisible shield of corrosion resistance. And the nickel is crucial because it acts like structural scaffolding.
okay, scaffolding.
It stabilizes what's called the austenite crystal structure, which is a specific, really densely packed arrangement of the atoms that holds up much better at those extreme temperatures.
So we look at this like a baking analogy.
Let's do it.
The iron, chromium, and nickel are our base ingredients, like the flour, the butter, and the eggs of our steel cake. But a cake is nothing without the active ingredients, right?
Yeah.
The things that cause the reactions. And the sources mention these trace additions to the steel: carbon, nitrogen, niobium, and titanium.
Yes, those trace elements are exactly where the magic and the danger happens.
Because there's just tiny amounts, right?
Exactly. They make up a tiny fraction of the weight, but they completely dictate how the cake behaves while it's in that 1023 Kelvin oven for 10,000 hours.
Wow.
And to understand why, we really have to look at a classic fatal flaw in steel called sensitization.
The sources spend a lot of time on sensitization. Walk us through the physical mechanics of it. Like, what is actually going wrong inside the metal?
Okay, so think of your steel not as one continuous sheet, but as millions of microscopic distinct crystals tightly packed together.
Okay, got it.
The lines where those crystals meet are called grain boundaries. Now, when you expose this steel to high heat for a long time, the carbon atoms in your recipe get highly energetic and restless.
Start moving around.
Yeah. And carbon has this massive chemical affinity for chromium. It just loves it.
Okay.
So the carbon atoms migrate to those grain boundaries and chemically lock onto the chromium, forming these hard, distinct particles called carbides.
Carbides, right.
Specifically, they form a type called M23C6 carbides right along the seams of the crystals.
Wait, so if the carbon is migrating to the edges and actively hoarding all the chromium to build these new particles,
yes,
then the metal right next to that boundary is suddenly left completely defenseless, right? It lost its protective chromium shield.
Precisely. It locally depletes the chromium in a microscopic zone right next to the boundary.
Yikes.
And without that chromium, the metal is highly vulnerable to corrosion. The boundaries literally rust out and crack from the inside.
It's like the mortar between the bricks suddenly turning to dust.
Exactly. So to stop this, metallurgists throw in elements like titanium or niobium.
The other trace ingredients.
Right. These act as highly attractive decoys. They're supposed to grab the carbon first, tying it up into harmless particles before the carbon can steal the vital chromium.
It's a microscopic, high-stakes turf war happening inside a solid beam of metal.
It really is.
Which brings us to the actual experiment the researchers ran. The mystery of the twin steels.
Right, the NF709 and the NF709R.
Exactly. They tested two specific, industrially ready grades of this material. They subjected both of them to static aging at 1023 Kelvin at an even hotter 1073 Kelvin.
Just baking them.
Baking them, yeah. And they checked the microstructural evolution at 1 hour, 200 hours, 2500 hours, all the way up to 10,000 hours.
That's over a year of continuous blistering heat just to see what kind of ecosystem evolved inside the steel.
And here is where I really have to stop and push back on the premise of the study.
Okay, why?
Because the chemical variance between these two metals is unbelievably small.
It is small.
I mean, NF709 is roughly 20% chromium with 0.06% carbon. NF709R is 22% chromium, but it only has 0.03% carbon.
Right, exactly half the carbon.
But we are talking about a fraction of a percent of an ingredient going from 0.06% to 0.03% in a massive heavy-duty industrial material.
Yeah.
I mean, common sense says that's an accounting error. It's a rounding error on a spreadsheet. How could a 0.03% difference possibly dictate whether a turbine blade survives or shatters?
It sounds absurd on a macro scale. Absolutely. I get that.
Right.
But when you are dealing with atomic interactions compounded by 10,000 hours of extreme heat, that 0.03% difference changes the entire architectural roadmap of the metal.
It's that butterfly effect you mentioned.
Exactly. Despite identical heat treatments, the twins grow up to have entirely different physical properties.
So how did the scientists actually observe these differences? I mean, you can't exactly crack open a steel beam and look at the atoms with a magnifying glass.
No, you have to get incredibly precise. And the way they did it highlights a major pitfall in scientific observation, honestly.
Oh, really?
Yeah. To see what kind of microscopic particles, like those carbides, were growing inside the steel, over a year in the oven, they initially used a standard technique called bulk extraction.
Okay, how does bulk extraction work mechanically?
They drop a piece of the metal into an electrolytic acid solution.
Okay.
And the acid is calibrated to dissolve the main body of the metal, the iron matrix, but leave the harder and newly formed chemical particles intact.
Oh, interesting.
So you're left with a liquid full of these microscopic carbides and nitrides just floating around. Then they simply pour that liquid through a membrane filter to catch the particles.
Like pouring pasta through a colander to drain the water.
Yeah, that's a great way to picture it.
So what was the pore size of the filter they used?
The filter had a pore size of 0.2 micrometers, which is 200 nanometers.
Okay, 200 nanometers.
They took whatever particles got caught on that membrane, hit them with x-rays, and analyzed the diffraction patterns to identify the unique chemical signatures of everything that grew inside the metal.
Literally sifting for microscopic gold.
Exactly. But the sources note a massive plot twist in the x-ray data.
A glaring omission, right?
Huge. According to the x-ray analysis of the filter residues, a very specific, highly anticipated particle called the Z-phase.
Which is what exactly?
It's a complex crystal made of chromium, niobium, and nitrogen. Anyway, This Z phase was virtually missing in the standard NF709 steel after it had been aged.
The X-ray data just confidently stated it wasn't there.
Right, it just wasn't there.
But the researchers were skeptical. They didn't just accept the X-ray data as absolute truth.
Thankfully, no. They suspected a flaw in the methodology, so they bypassed the extraction method entirely and used a much more advanced tool.
What was that?
Transmission electron microscopy, or TEM. Instead of dissolving the metal, TEM requires taking an actual slice of the steel so unimaginably thin that it is practically transparent.
Wow.
Then you shoot a beam of high-energy electrons directly through it to map the structure atom by atom. And when they look through the TEM, boom, the Z phase was everywhere.
So the X-ray method missed it completely. Why? Was the X-ray machine broken?
The machine was perfectly fine. The prep method was the problem. When they looked at the Z phase under the electron microscope, they saw that these particles had grown as tiny, needle-like rods.
Okay.
And they were only 20 to 50 nanometers long.
Oh.
Yeah.
The filter pores were 200 nanometers wide.
Exactly. It's like trying to catch grains of sand using a chain-link fence.
They just fell right through.
The Z-phase rods literally slipped right through the 200 nanometer holes in the filter and washed away down the metaphorical drain.
That is wild.
The scientists even double-checked by taking the leftover liquid that passed through the filter and spinning it in a centrifuge for a massive amount of time, and they still found nothing.
Because they were just too small.
The particles were just too small to be caught by the standard industrial method.
You know, for everyone listening right now, this is such a brilliant, tangible metaphor for how we process information in our own lives.
Oh, for sure.
We live in a world of absolute data overload, and we rely on systems to filter the signal from the noise. But if you set up an aggressive spam filter to catch the obvious junk, you might inadvertently filter out the single most important email from your boss because it had like a weird subject line.
Exactly.
The tool you use to clean your data can actually blind you to the truth. I mean, if you use a filter with the wrong pore size for your life or your business, you are going to let the most critical details slip right through unnoticed.
All while sitting there confidently holding on to flawed data. It is a stark reminder that the absence of evidence is not evidence of absence.
Right.
Sometimes you just have a leaky net. You have to match your diagnostic tool to the scale of the reality you are trying to understand.
That is so true. And once they finally had the right tool, the electron microscope, how did this elusive Z phase behave in the variant steel, the NF709R?
Well, NF709R, the twin with only 0.03% carbon, the Z phase was highly prominent. And through the TEM imaging, they saw it doing something fascinating structurally. The Z-phase rods were rapidly forming along the material's internal defects, which are called dislocations.
Dislocations, what are those?
Think of dislocations as microscopic fault lines inside the crystal. The Z-phase particles lined up perfectly along these stress lines, almost like beads on a string.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, effectively anchoring those fault lines and heavily influencing how the metal would handle physical stress later.
And because they were forced to look so closely with the electron microscope, they didn't just find the missing Z-phase. They actually stumbled onto a true scientific first hiding inside the atomic lattice.
Yes. Deep within the microstructure of both steels, the researchers found a completely undocumented precipitation sequence.
Undocumented, like entirely new.
Over the thousands of hours of aging, a specific particle formed with a diamond cubic structure, meaning its atoms were arranged in a lattice resembling a carbon diamond. Now, previous scientific literature had seen something structurally similar in other grades of steel and safely assumed it was a carbide, specifically Cr3 ion I to C.
Meaning it was primarily stabilized by carbon.
Right. But these researchers didn't assume anything. To prove what it actually was, they used meticulous measurements of the crystal lattice parameters.
Okay.
And to ensure their measurements were flawless, they used something called the Nelson-Riley function.
Okay, we need to pause here, because Nelson-Riley function sounds like something out of a sci-fi movie.
It does sound pretty high-tech.
What is that actually doing mechanically?
Fair enough. So, when you hit a crystal with X-rays or electrons to measure the distance between atoms, the physical equipment itself can introduce tiny distortions.
Like calibration errors.
Kind of. The angle of the beam might be off by a fraction of a degree. Imagine trying to measure the exact distance between two cars parked on a street, but you have to look through a slightly curved funhouse mirror.
Oh, that makes sense.
The Nelson-Riley function is a clever mathematical formula that extrapolates those measurements out to a theoretical zero error angle.
Got it.
It essentially corrects the distortion of the funhouse mirror, allowing them to measure the microscopic atomic spacing with undeniable precision.
So they get the exact true distance between the atoms in this mystery particle. And what did that distance tell them?
The geometric spacing proved beyond a shadow of a doubt that the particle wasn't a carbide at all. It was Cr3 ionite syn.
With an N.
Yes, the N stands for nitrogen.
So it was the trace nitrogen in the recipe that stabilized it, not the carbon.
Exactly.
How does nitrogen physically do that?
Well, carbon and nitrogen are both incredibly tiny atoms, but nitrogen atoms fit into the crystal lattice just slightly differently. By locking into those specific gaps in the diamond cubic structure, the nitrogen creates a sort of microscopic gridlock.
Gridlock, I like that.
It physically prevents the other elements from shifting around and rearranging themselves into a more brittle carbide shape. Mm. It is a novel nitride, entirely misidentified by previous researchers because it looks structurally almost identical to a known carbide, unless you do the math to clear the distortion.
That is incredible. But let's shift gears and talk about the actual villain of our story.
Oh, yes.
Because while they were finding novel nitrides, they also ran into the sigma phase.
The notorious sigma phase.
Right. In the metallurgical world, sigma has a terrible reputation. Why are engineers so afraid of it?
Sigma phase is traditionally known as a metallurgical grim reaper.
Grim reaper.
Yeah, it's an iron chromium compound that can form when these steels sit at high temperatures. The problem is its physical nature. Sigma is exceptionally hard, but it is incredibly brittle.
Brittle is bad for a turbine.
Very bad. When massive amounts of sigma phase form in a steel, it usually causes severe embrittlement. It turns a tough, flexible metal into something prone to shattering under impact or stress.
And the researchers found this villainous sigma phase in our twin steels.
They did, but only in one of them. Yeah. In the standard NF709 with the higher carbon, there was practically no sigma at all.
Okay.
But in the NF709R variant, the one with the halved carbon, after about 2,500 hours of aging in the oven, sigma started showing up.
Oh.
And by 10,000 hours, it had formed these massive intergranular plates. We are talking plates 15 to 20 micrometers long, growing right through the middle of the metal grains.
Wait, 15 to 20 micrometers. We were just talking about Z-phase rods that were 50 nanometers long.
Right.
In the microscopic scale of this metal, these sigma plates are absolute skyscrapers.
They are monolithic. Visually, under a microscope, they look like giant disruptive slabs slicing through the atomic structure.
Right, so logically, let's deduce the outcome here.
Let's do it.
If NF709R is absolutely riddled with these giant, notoriously brittle sigma plates,
yes,
and the standard NF709 is clean, it has none of them, then NF709R must perform terribly under pressure.
Yeah.
I mean, if you put that in a turbine, it must be as brittle as glass.
That is the exact logical conclusion the researchers wanted to test. So after baking these metals for 10,000 hours, they didn't just observe them passively.
Wait, they tested them.
They subjected both specimens to a brutal physical trauma, a compression test.
Okay.
They took solid cylinders of both steels and physically crushed them, deforming them by 30% of their original size.
30% deformation on a solid steel block is massive.
Yeah.
What happened? Did the sigma-riddled twin shatter?
The results were a complete paradox.
Really?
The standard NF709, the one without the giant villain sigma plates, cracked. It failed.
Wait, what?
Specifically, it suffered from severe, widespread cracking all along its grain boundaries.
And the NF709R, the one full of the brittle skyscraper plates.
The NF709R specimen absorbed the 30% deformation perfectly. It did not crack.
You're kidding?
Nope. It demonstrated vastly superior ductility and structural integrity, even though it was harboring the supposedly fatal sigma phase.
That defies all logic. How is that physically possible?
It forces a complete reevaluation of what actually causes a complex system to fail. The brittleness in the standard NF709 wasn't caused by giant, obvious anomalies.
Yep.
It was caused by the invisible, overwhelming saturation of much smaller flaws, those tiny M23C6 carbides we talked about at the very beginning.
Oh, right, the ones at the boundaries.
Yes, because the standard NF709 had 0.06% carbon, there was enough carbon to swarm and completely pave the grain boundaries with thousands of microscopic brittle carbides.
So going back to our stained glass window analogy, the lead seams holding the glass together were entirely replaced by brittle, dried out mortar.
Exactly. When the massive compressive pressure hit the metal, the glass didn't break, the mortar failed, the seams simply unzipped, and the grain boundaries cracked wide open.
Wow.
But in NF709R, because the carbon was cut down to just 0.03%, it starved that reaction.
There wasn't enough carbon.
There simply wasn't enough carbon to pave the grain boundaries. Yes, the leftover elements combined to form giant sigma plates inside the grains themselves, but the actual boundaries holding the structure together remained clean, metallic, and flexible.
So the biggest, most visually obvious flaw, the giant sigma plates, wasn't the fatal one.
Not at all.
The real threat was the microscopic systemic saturation that you couldn't even see unless you knew exactly what to look for. The obvious bad guy was just a distraction from the invisible structural rot.
Precisely. It's rarely the giant, visible crack in the middle of a brick that brings down the building. It's the microscopic weakness in the foundation you ignored because it didn't look dramatic.
This has been such an incredible journey into the unseen mechanics of our world.
Mm.
Let's distill the core insights from this deep dive.
Sounds good.
First, we saw how an impossibly small variable, a 0.03% change in carbon, literally a rounding error, completely rewrites a metal's destiny over 10,000 hours, determining whether it survives extreme stress or shatters.
Second, we learned that the tools you use define the reality you perceive. Using a 200-nanometer filter caused scientists to completely miss the vital 50-nanometer Z phase,
right,
proving that if your diagnostic tool doesn't match the scale of your problem, you will confidently ignore the truth.
And finally, we saw how the obvious villain, the giant monolithic sigma phase, wasn't the real threat to the steel's structural integrity. The true danger was the invisible systemic saturation of tiny carbides at the seams of the material.
It is a profound masterclass in looking past assumptions and investigating the underlying mechanics of any complex system.
It really is. And I want to leave you, the listener, with a final thought to mull over today as you look at the complex systems in your own life, whether that's your company, your community, or your personal habits.
Yeah.
We just saw how a fraction of a percent of a single ingredient over enough time completely rewrites the fundamental rules of a super alloy.
Small variances compound into entirely different realities.
So ask yourself, what tiny, seemingly insignificant variables in your own daily routines are creating massive, unseen structural changes over time?
Mm-hmm.
What invisible Z phase is slipping right through the filter of your attention, quietly reshaping your future, while you spend all your energy distracted by the giant obvious sigma plates?
Something to think about.
Thank you so much for taking this deep dive with us today. We'll see you next time.